Well, we are here today with Phil Noble. He is a Democratic candidate for the governor of South Carolina. How you doing today, Phil?
Life is great. I'm having a wonderful time.
You are having a wonderful time.
Yeah.
You know, I was just thinking, you know, you are really, you've not been in political office, correct?
That's right.
That's right. So you are an outsider to the political, being a political person. And I was just wondering, what would you think of a matchup between Donald Trump and Oprah Winfrey?
I'd love to sell tickets to that one.
That would be quite something, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it? Yeah, it would. You know, I'm not a Donald Trump fan, but I am sort of an Oprah Winfrey fan. You know, I think what is happening is that the definition of what is and is not acceptable to hold political office is expanding radically, obviously. I mean, we elected a guy president who's never been in government, never been in public office, never even been in the military. And I don't think that's per se bad.
Well, I guess you'd have to kind of look at yourself here, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I mean, I've been in and around politics all my life. But I haven't.
I think Donald Trump was as a contributor.
That's right. That's right.
And he certainly looked to get what he could out of politicians.
Yeah, I've hopefully been in politics for involved with politics for other reasons, and I came by it really innocently. When I was a 9-year-old kid, we were living in Anniston, Alabama, mm-hmm. and my dad was a preacher, and one day I was walking through the living room, minding my own business, and he said, sit down, boy, you need to watch this. And it was the Kennedy-Nixon debate. And so after the debate, he said, what do you think? And so I said, well, you know, I kind of like that Kennedy guy. And he said, well, why don't you go help him in the campaign? And I said, do what? Well, the next day after school, I got on my little red bicycle, and I rode down to the Democratic Party headquarters, and I walked in the door, fully expecting to see John Kennedy there, right?
You know, but right there.
Right there. But he wasn't there. But it was exciting. I mean, the phones were ringing, and people were banging signs together, and there was an old mimeograph machine. Remember mimeograph? It was sort of a hand.
I don't remember that.
It was sort of a hand crank copy machine is right. What it was. And it was exciting. And this little old lady came up and says, can I help you? And I pointed to the picture on the wall, and I said, yeah, I want to help get him elected president, and, you know, with all the audacity of a 9-year-old. And she laughed and looked around and picked up a stack of campaign brochures and said, here, go hand these out. And I'm sure she never expected to see me again.
Right.
So I went out and handed them out, and I turned around and came back and said, okay, now what? Well, in one way, shape, or form, I had been walking into campaign headquarters ever since, you know, helping people, working in campaigns as a volunteer, working as paid staff. And years ago, I was a consultant. But, you know, I have been involved in politics in the larger sense all my life. I've never been in public office.
You ran for public office.
I did. Back 1994. Hey, you remember better than I do. I ran for lieutenant governor. But that was a long time ago. But that's okay. It was fun, and it was a little crazy. Best I remember is a long time ago. But
Well, what made you decide to run now?
Yeah. Well, you know, in the last 30 years or so, I've been involved with all sorts of terrific community projects and organizations throughout this state, working in education and healthcare, race relations, environmental cleanup, jobs. And I really became convinced that this really is a wonderful state with enormous potential. I mean, about a third of our state's just nuts, and that's what makes it interesting. But
a third of our state is nuts?
Yeah, we're just nuts. I mean, you know, I think somebody said to me, a third of South Carolina would secede from the Union again today, even if they knew we were going to lose the war again. And I think that's probably right. I mean, you know, we have a lot of us are nuts in this state. But we've got this.
We believe in independence, don't
well,
you think?
Absolutely.
That's what it is. Better.
It is that independence. I think, I've always said that I think the driving ethos of this state is not conservatism. I think it's independence. And I think it's the independence going back to the days of the Tea Party flag was the flag of Christopher Gadsden, a rabble rouser from Charleston, who was also, people don't know generally, but he was the second richest man in America. He was a very affluent guy. But he was very independent, and I think that is sort of what South Carolina is about that independence. And I think that, you know, as you look at this state, we are a terrific state, but our politics is broken and it's corrupt and it's dysfunctional.
Well, I think that's an interesting question. I know that when you said you were running for governor, you said only an independent outsider can bring real reform that will move our state forward.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely believe that.
You believe that?
Absolutely.
But isn't the very fact of business and political partnerships lend themselves to levels of corruption because they are washing one hand washes the other, and all these type of things that happen in relationships where, and in this case, business and political.
Well, I think you're exactly right in that the problem is that our politics in Columbia has become, as you say, corrupt with business interest and money, essentially buying the legislature, buying votes.
And I think doesn't the nature of politics in general, when you are working with the public sector, it actually engenders that, though, doesn't it?
Oh, I think it encourages it, but it's not required. I mean, if you know, I don't believe that corruption is a necessary component of democracy. You know, I think clearly when you have one party, be it Democrat or Republican, who's in power for a long time, you know, what is the saying that power corrupts absolutely, absolute power corrupts absolutely? And I think that's what's happened. I mean,
Do you think that it's the power at the top, or do you believe that it is the middle that stays there, that doesn't move and becomes comfortable with it?
Well, I think what happens is that a lot of good and decent people from both parties, they get elected, they go to Columbia, and they say, you know, well, I'm going to try to do the right thing for my constituency, which is great. And then one day some guy comes into them and says, look, I'm from a lobbyist for the South Carolina Association of fill in the blank, whatever it is, and there's this issue up and it's in your committee, but it really doesn't have anything to do with your part of the state, or it doesn't have anything to do with your constituency, and I know you're not really interested in it. When that bill comes up, why don't you just go to the bathroom? Why don't you just, you don't have to vote for it. You don't have to, just go to the bathroom.
So the guy I thought the idea of a lobbyist was they use the lobbyists to help them make decisions because they provide so much information.
Well, but we'll get to that. But the information is you don't really care about this vote. It doesn't have anything to do with your constituency. So just don't vote for it or against it. Just take a walk. So they take a walk. And then a week later, $5,000 shows up. And they go, oh, well, that was easy. You know, here was a lobbyist who's very powerful and influential. And, you know, he didn't ask me to vote against something I cared about. He just said, take a walk. So then there's $5,000. Well, that was pretty easy. And then the next time it said, well, you know, you don't have to vote for it in final passage, but maybe vote for this amendment. And you do. And all of a sudden it's $10,000. And one thing leads to another, and it's a slippery slope, and down you go. And I think that, you know, that's why I'm the only candidate, Democrat or Republican, who doesn't take PAC money. Because I think it's that PAC money, that Political Action Committee money, that mm-hmm. corrupts the system. And it corrupts Democrats and Republicans and the House and the Senate. And I think that's the problem. That's the problem, is the money that corrupts the system. And an insider who's sitting there, a part of that system, taking the money, engaged in that kind of, you know, give and take, buying and selling of votes, can't change the system. It's got to be from the outside. It's got to be from the grassroots up. It just doesn't ever come.
But I think there's a lot more than I mean, that's shall we say, the big topic. A lot smaller topic, but a equally as valid topic is the one where that middle manager is getting a little extra to do this, that, or the other. And then it's not money so much as it is tickets or graft or any of these types of things. Yeah. And that makes it so that that person maybe has access to somebody who is more powerful.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think it's either Democrats or Republicans, House or Senate. I think the whole system is corrupt. And it's the
how would you even think that you could dismantle that? I mean, just to use as an example, Trump went in to drain the swamp. He's finding he can't even drain it, no matter what they try to do.
Right. Well, I would hope that I don't have some of the personal characteristics nor the financial encumbrance of Trump. I think you start by setting an example. Number one, as I said, I'm the only candidate that's not taking PAC money. Because I think political action committee money corrupts the system in Columbia, it corrupts it in Washington. Secondly, I think every candidate for office, governor on down, needs to make a full financial disclosure of all their income, who's paying them, how much, why.
Haven't they actually set that up with the ethics?
Well,
that is something that is either done or is coming, one of the two.
Well, it's sort of Swiss cheese reform. There's more holes than there is cheese. But no, there's no mandatory income disclosure. Members of the legislature can do business with state government. When I'm governor, everybody who works with me is going to sign a commitment that they won't lobby state government. They won't work for state government. They won't do business with state government for a lifetime, forever. We've got to draw a line separating personal interest and private interest. And the system we've got now has become so corrupt that it is preventing us from doing all the other things that we need. That's the problem. I mean, as bad as the corruption is, the problem is that corruption keeps us from having good schools, of decent roads, of fair taxes, of a healthcare system that works. Because the system is so perverted. And that's the problem. I mean,
unfortunately, even when you talk about the roads, roads need that public-private partnership.
Sure. But there's a difference between a public-private partnership that works effectively in a transparent way to serve a public good and a crooked road contractor and a corrupt Department of Transportation guy getting together to do deals to enrich themselves, and roads don't get built. A public-private partnership can be wonderful. It can be corrupt. And what I'm saying is that we've got to turn the spotlight on these guys, and we've got to mandate that the institutional structure does not tolerate corruption. For example, if you're a member of the legislature, and you say you're a lawyer. And somebody comes in.
That's pretty possible if you're in the legislature.
That's exactly
yes.
Right. And somebody comes in from one of the utility companies and says, "Hi, we want to put your firm on retainer for $15,000 a month." Oh, well, what do you want me to do? We'll call you if we need you. Well, you just got bought. You just got bought. And we don't know. We don't know how many members of the legislature are on retainers, are getting consulting contracts for them and for the family, because it's dark money. It's hidden. And it's essentially legalized bribery. And that's what it is. And as long as we have that system, we're never going to get the kind of good government we need.
Well, I need to ask you a very serious question.
Sure.
Will you have anybody working in your cabinet?
Oh, sure.
To find people that that would honor that commitment, I think is pretty far in between.
Oh, I don't. I am convinced, and I see it every day when I'm campaigning, that the state government, particularly out of the legislature, has been run all far and by a small group of people who operated for their own self-interest. And the rest of us, people who are outside of the state, outside of state government, women, people in rural areas, people with different sexual orientations, people who are not part of that system, are effectively shut out of that system. And as I talk to people over and over again, I hear people say, well, you know, I'd really like to do something with DHEC because I'm really a committed environmentalist, but I'm not going to go up there and get in that swamp. But if you say to them, would you come do it for 2 years and you could make a difference and I'll have your back, they'll go, oh, yeah, I'll be there. They'll do it. People in this state know what's going on. They're tired of it. They're angry at it. And if you give them a chance, I believe this, because I've seen it happen in my own life with projects that I've worked on all over the state for 30 years. If you say to people, here's a problem, here's something that you can do to fix it and make it better, will you do that? Mm-hmm. They will. They will. Because people are basically good and decent people who want to have a better community and a better life for themselves and their children. The problem is the system we've got now prevents that from happening. They don't want to participate. Do you want to go up there? You want to get involved?
Me?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I like my job right here.
Yeah, but why won't you?
My job of being able to watch everybody and talk to everybody.
I understand. Yeah. But that's my point. That's my point is that you're someone. I mean, I don't know you very well, but I assume you care about this state and this people and what happens. But you're not willing to go up there and mess with that swamp and alligators.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Right.
But there are plenty of people in this state who will.
Well, I think that's terrific. And speaking of swamp and everything, what do you what are your thoughts on the Scana Dominion merger? They are today supposed to be making the potential Dominion's SCE and G merger won't affect proposed legislation. They said, what do you think? Should people have to pay? What should the deal go forward? What do you think?
I think the Dominion merger is the same scam, just different people. That's all it is. My position about all of the utility reform is very simple. We want all our money back, all of it, and people ought to go to jail. That's it. That's where we need to start. And if we don't have a governor or legislators who are committed to those two basic principles, number one, we want the money back. The only people who are absolutely blameless in this are the ratepayers. The only people who are responsible is the board and the management of South Carolina Electric and Gas, the stockholders, and Santee Cooper board and officials. They are, and then you throw in there the legislature, which allowed this to happen after they became, the legislature, face it, is essentially a bought and paid for, wholly owned subsidiary of the utilities. They are. That's what it is. And if we don't start with the assumption that people need their money back, there's corruption, and people ought to go to jail, that's the baseline of where we ought to start. The Base Load Review Act, the legislation that allowed this to happen, that's non-negotiable. It's gone. There's no discussion. We got people talking, well, maybe we could reform it and this. And no. That's the problem, is these people who say, well, let's try to work out a deal on that. Because anytime there's a deal going on in Columbia, the people who are going to get screwed are you and me and the ratepayers.
So you believe that the customers should get the refund.
100%.
And be damned is what happens to the rest of them.
That's correct.
I mean, that's basically what you're
that's
saying.
That's right. Yes. I mean, I think, you know, we need to roll back rates to 2007, where we were when this thing started. They need to refund 100% of the $9 billion that they lost to the taxpayers. On my first day in office, I'd fire the whole board of Santee Cooper, 100% gone. And I'd find a way to force out the management and senior management board of South Carolina Electric and Gas. And whatever is the outcome, it needs to be focused on making things whole for the citizens preventing the legislature from doing it again, doing it to us again. And make no mistake, the legislature passed the bill to allow it to happen. They were bought and paid for, wholly owned subsidiary of the utilities. They're the ones responsible for it. And the notion that says, well, wait a minute, the legislature is going to conduct an investigation. Wonderful. 32 members of the House and Senate who are, quote, investigating, every single one of them took money from the utilities. Everyone. Now, you tell me, how many places do you know, well, I'll pay you, but you know, I'm going to investigate you. That's you know, a 10-year-old knows that's a load.
I agree. All right, we've got to move on. I got another question for you. There is President Trump has just said they're going to allow oil exploration off the South Carolina coast. What do you think?
No, never, no how, no time, no place, no way.
Could I say your answer is no?
I would say you could put me down for no.
No. So, but it looks like it is going to happen.
It ain't happen until it happens. You know, we're a long way from that. Donald Trump has got to deal with, as much as he may not like it, he has to deal with courts. He has to deal with a lot of, when I'm there, a lot of governors who won't support that. Folks up and down the coast don't like that. We're a long, long, long way from having it happen.
The one what about thing, the economic benefit?
Well, there is economic, could be economic benefit, but there's also economic downside. The second largest industry in this state is tourism. And the last thing we need is a bunch of oil spills that comes from offshore drilling. I mean, you talk to folks down at the Gulf. I think it was, you know, maybe 3, maybe even 4 years before they fully recovered, and some would argue they hadn't recovered yet from the effects of the oil spill down there. So, you know, again, no.
Okay.
Plain and simple.
All right, no. Now, another question for you. In the latest poll that is out there, looks like you're at 25.5% and 20.6 for somebody else. I love this.
I saw that.
Who? And then 24.4 for James Smith. And yet James Smith has been endorsed by Riley and Hodges and a huge group down there in Charleston. What do you have to say?
I think the poll speaks volumes. Endorsements don't mean much these days. People make up their own mind. You know, it's a classic situation of the political insiders in the state legislature get together, they pick out their candidate, and they say, oh, yeah, here's our boy. It's always a boy. It's always a white boy. Not that I've got any problems with white boys. But
I hope not. You look like one to me.
Yeah, I was this morning. And they get together and they pick one of their own, and they're very nice people. And you know, I'm sure they go to church on Sunday and love their children and pat their dogs. And they run a dull and boring campaign with no ideas, talking about same old, and then they try to be Republican light. They try to be just sort of, you know, well, I won't really tell people what I believe. I'll try to fuzz it up so that maybe some Republicans will vote for me, and they lose. And it's happened 7 out of 8 past elections.
Right.
They've lost. Democrats have lost. And, you know, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but if something happens 7 times, I think I could figure out there's a pattern here. And I think people, you know, I don't think people responding because they think Phil Noble's the greatest thing since sliced bread. I think they're responding to the message about what I'm talking about the need for reform, the need to change the political system. And I think they believe that, you know, change always comes from the outside, not from the inside, from the grassroots up, not the top down. That's the way the world works. And, you know, nobody in the legislature is going to fundamentally change the legislature. If they had been there 20 years and it's the same way it's been for the last 20 years, then why would you think they're going to change in the next 20 years? They're not.
So should you succeed at this, would you?
When I succeed.
When you succeed, you will be going up against the party, really.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean, part of the new Democratic Party, right? Mm-hmm. But you will be going up against the Democratic Party here in South Carolina.
Well, the Democratic Party is not a monolith. There are a lot of people in the Democratic Party. There are a lot of opinions in the Democratic Party. And what that poll says is that, at least for today, more people in the South Carolina Democratic Party agree with my views than agree with Mr. Somebody Else or whoever is the next candidate there.
Okay. All right. Now, I got one last question I'm going to ask you.
Sure.
South Carolina, healthcare, mental illness, and addiction. And mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that has always bothered me about is the mentally ill, the schizophrenics, the depressives, all these people that have no place to go, no place to be served.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a huge problem, not only here in South Carolina, but in the country. And we don't seem to be making any strides towards solving it. What's the answer?
Well, I don't think there's a single answer, but I'll tell you a story. When I was a kid, my dad was a Presbyterian preacher, and he used to get letters in the mail from the Charleston County Mental Health Association. And I had a little brother and a big sister, and they both made much better grades in school than I did. And so I thought I was like retarded or something. And they were getting all these letters to me about, you know, your son is, we got to figure it out. But what I came to learn a few years later is my dad was chairman of the mental health board. And they built a beautiful center, et cetera. And they had a plaque on the front door. And I'll never forget as long as I live. It said very simply, it said, built by those who care for those who need. And it's very simple. Mm-hmm. It's very simple. And, we have huge problems in this state with, as you said, with mental illness, addiction, mental health. And if people who care about it, who really care about it, and are willing to take action, we can fix these problems. And we're not going to solve every problem every way, but we can fix them. But if we start out by saying, anytime government spends money, it's bad. Anytime we have to pay taxes, it's bad. You don't get anything. You can't fix some of these problems without money. Now, money is not the root, not the way to solve all the problems, but you cannot solve the issues of mental health in this state if you cut the budget of the Department of Mental Health so that 15, 20, 25% of the people who are supposed to be at the hospitals taking care of these people don't have a job.
Well, we don't even have the space for the people that
That's
need
exactly
the help.
Right.
I mean,
That's exactly
did
right.
away with Bull Street. I mean, now
exactly
there's
right.
a lot of question about Bull Street, but still it was a place where people could go and
yeah.
they were taken care of. Now we have them, and this is all across the country.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, the system has to be developed where we look at the issue not from the perspective of a bean counter in Columbia looking at a budget spreadsheet, but look at it from the perspective of that, you know, 18-year-old woman who is schizophrenic or addicted or has been abused as a child. What is it that she needs? And we need to start with what they need and instead of starting with what is some politician willing to spend. That's the problem. That's the problem because we look at it from the wrong end. And what a governor can do is be their advocate. I can't remember who it was, but somebody said that the test of government is, does it care for those in the shadows of life, the end of life, and the backwaters of life, or something like that. And I believe that. I mean, I'm a preacher's kid. I mean, I do believe we are our brother's keeper. It doesn't mean that every dollar that the government spends is good, or every dollar we cut is good or bad. We have to be smart. We have to accept responsibility for fixing our community. And I mean, we've got about a third of this state, about a third, 25-30%, that's hurting, that needs help, you know, because of the zip where they live or their family background. And South Carolina's a boat, and you can't sink a third of a boat. And we got to figure out a way to bring those folks into the productive mainstream of our society and take care of those who can't take care of themselves. And it's not about liberal or conservative. It's about being smart and about being effective and being compassionate. And it's not about Democrat or Republican. It's about trying to look at the world in a different way. And if you spent your whole life, your whole adult life, in the state legislature talking about H. Res. 145 and the Budget Reconciliation Act, then you lose sight of what it's all about. And I start from the other side. And that's why I'm different. People, I think, recognize that. I think what that poll says is that people are ready for that and want that. And I think that's why I win, not because I'm so great, but because the message of what I'm talking about is what resonates with people in this state.
Phil Noble, thank you for coming in today, and we'll look forward to a real sit-down on the radio sometime soon.
Anytime. Thank you. I appreciate it. And, you know, anybody who's interested, come. We got a website, philnoble.com. Come, give us your email address. We'd love to get you involved. We'd love to get your ideas about how we need to fix some of these problems. God knows I don't have all the answers, but I do think that we in South Carolina have the answers. We just need to get people together, work together, figure out how to do this. And we can be a great state. We can be what we were meant to be.
Well, I do think that one of the things that is fortunate for South Carolina is that we are a small state. We're not embroiled in a huge state. So we can move much quicker than what a big state can.
Oh, yeah. We're really just a big, small town. We really are. And one of my favorite quotes from John Kennedy is that our problems are man-made. Therefore, man can solve these problems. The question is just how big do we want to be? And that's really the question for us in South Carolina.
And how willing we are.
Exactly, yes. That's right. How big do we want to be? And I think we want to be pretty damn big. And I'm excited about it.
Well, thank you very much for coming in. This is Phil Nobles here with us today. And you can check out his website, philnoble.com. And let's see, you have a Facebook page. And I think you have a Twitter account.
We got all that stuff.
You got all that stuff. Well, carry on. And thanks for stopping by WCRS today.
And thank you. I appreciate being asked.
All right. Bye-bye.